What's going on, Titans? We're back with an episode of Daily Titan Podcast, or DT Pod for short. I'm your host, Assistant Lifestyle Editor, Kabir Kansara.
And I'm Jaden Lovelady, the Lifestyle Editor, and also your other host.
And today we're going to be covering Volume 116, Issue Number 8 of the Daily Titan Newspaper. Today we'll be featuring a couple of stories, our top story being an opinion on student protests, our top news story being coverage of the most recent protest that just happened on campus. For Lifestyle, we're going to be covering the Warehouse of Contemporary Art and the event they just held on Saturday. And in opinion, we'll be covering textured hair care. For our sports desk, we're going to be heading on over to men's water polo.
You know, the streets have been absolutely littered with sayings.
Like, what are they saying?
They're saying that we have a guest on this pod, and that it's Luis Vizcaino, which is our opinion editor. Can you believe it?
I cannot. Somebody needs to fact check that right now.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm Luis. I'm the opinion editor.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Did you write a story this week? I've also heard that littered in the streets.
I did write a story.
What'd you talk about?
I was talking about the right to protest. Just because of what we've seen over the last year. We've seen a lot of large protests and encampments break out on college campuses across the country and even the world. And, you know, that was started because of the October 7th attack. And we've seen a lot of responses from campus administrations. In August, we saw the CSU Board of Trustees kind of update their time, place, and manner. Cal State Fullerton already had their own, but that was just like a broad, and, you know, it was a response to the protests that we saw. But I was just writing about the importance of paying attention to those kinds of rules, even if you don't have an interest in protesting, or, you know, if you think that you don't want to protest, or you think that like it's good to have these kinds of rules. To a certain degree, it is important to have these rules. But if we allow like the rulemakers, everybody that's placing this, you know, they always use the defense that it's for the public good, or trying to keep ordinance, try to keep everything safe. If we don't keep an eye on that and make sure that it's actually neutral policies and things like that, it can pretty quickly turn into just complete silence of our right to protest. And, you know, when they create these rules and you break them even a little bit, it does allow them to engage like enforcement or things like that. And that can just push these protests to escalate. But that's basically the story. It's, yeah, you know, keep an eye on what administrators are saying, what you can and can't do.
Mm. Yeah, it definitely like, it feels like a lot of smoke and mirrors from rulemakers about like their... It's like performative listening where they're like, yeah, we hear you. Like we understand the struggle. But then it's like, how much impact can you have if you're doing it within the confines of what people want you to do?
Yeah. Like the whole 1 hour with noisemakers. Like I understand like, yes, it is disruptive to class, but isn't a protest supposed to be disruptive?
Yeah. Protests are definitely, when you look at kind of the line of civic engagement, it starts off like you're going through a problem and you take the steps like, hey, maybe I'll go to the local city council and I'll speak on it. I'll try to get things moving. But it starts getting to a point where you start getting more engagement from people, or you start noticing that there's a lot more to this or to the issue. And no matter what you do, you're just not getting a response from administrators, government, agencies, from anything. And that's when it starts getting to the point where you decide like, okay, I'm going to go out and I'm going to make sure that like this is known. Like we need people to see that this is happening. We need people to acknowledge that this is happening, and we need to do it in a way that administrators just can't look away anymore. Not behind closed doors or anything. Like we're going to be out on the streets marching and like chanting this. And when people do marches, they're more demonstrations, so that you have your signs, you're trying to call attention to something, kind of like what we saw with the Black Lives Matter protest. Yeah. That's from a long line of civil disobedience and just police brutality. Mm-hmm. It's from the Black Lives Matter movement comes from a long line of police brutality, and it wasn't their first resort, right? The protest came after civil rights movement, protests came after reports and trying to get these officers to comply with the laws that they're supposed to be enforcing, and to treat people equally. But it's protest, demonstrations and protests are towards the last resort. This isn't enough. We need people and everybody to be calling to administrators to act. Yeah. And that is like an important difference, is that demonstrations are, they're peaceful. Not that protests can't be peaceful, but demonstrations are peaceful.
I found the quote because you talked to a criminal justice professor, Professor Lovell, he was saying how women didn't vote themselves to right to vote, and slaves didn't vote themselves to be freed. They fought for it. And I think that that's important because there's only so much you can do within like the legal structure. Like at some point you do have to go out in there and like get after your message and the things that you want.
Yeah. And it's definitely like those kinds of things. That's like just one of the biggest arguments in favor of protests.
Yeah.
And kind of like cautionary of regulating these protests, because obviously government administrators, everybody, were against those kinds of movements, you know, like at least in the South for the civil rights movement, or even during the Civil War. Like there was protests, rebellions and everything, and it broke into the Civil War because of all the tensions. And that obviously wasn't the first resort. You know, slaves did a lot of things to try to break themselves free, to try to make movement in a way that was peaceful. But because of everything that they're experiencing, how long it was, and just the lack of movement or sufficient movement, that's when it breaks into like protests, rebellions, fights, and ultimately the Civil War.
Did you run into like any problems when trying to write this article or researching it?
There's a very fine line when speaking about protests, civil disobedience, and just First Amendment rights in general. There's a very fine line of being inflammatory or being like very, you know, call to arms type, and just kind of calling attention to like the rights that we have of being able to speak out, being able to show our dissatisfaction with the way that our government's functioning or actions that administrators are taking or our leaders are taking. So trying to navigate that fine line of saying that you should pay attention to these protests, but you know, you should follow the rules as much as possible. But when it starts getting to the final resort, there's just only so much you can do. And that's when you have to come out and like, you know, really aggravate and try to make administrators, rulemakers, policymakers, lawmakers, anybody with the power to change things, you have to make them uncomfortable, because that's the only thing that's going to make them move, because they have so many other things that they're trying to do. They're trying to, you know, if you're running a city, you're doing so many other things. And if you have a protest happening, you're going to try to like address what they're doing either by silencing them or by trying to listen to them and like follow what they're saying. So that's one of the reasons why it works. They have so much on their plate. If you're not causing a little ruckus, they're not going to pay attention to you.
Do you find that this is like applicable to campus as well? Like when you were writing this, did you have the focus of college campus protests, or were you thinking like more broadly? Like where did you pull, not inspiration, but like where did you pull data from?
Yeah. So I did have college campuses in mind, you know, because of the year of all the protesting and everything that we saw. But this definitely applies overall, because all levels of government have some sort of rules on how and where and when to protest. But college campuses, I think, is where a lot of people first start to or are exposed to it. You know, during the last year, we saw a lot of protests on campus. Like that was probably the first experience for a lot of people of actually seeing like what a protest looks like, having the signs, having people speaking and everything. So college campuses are a very, very important part of it. A lot of movements come out of college campuses. So if they're limited or restricted, you're kind of, it's a limit to progress in general, because a lot of the movements that we've seen have come from college campuses, and college campuses are meant to be intellectual kind of battle spaces. They're, you know, you're supposed to be able to speak on things, which is why I wasn't picking any sides with this story. Even if I disagree with you to a certain degree, like you should be able to speak up on that, because if you can't speak up on that, that means that either I can't speak up on it either, or my time is pretty limited because they're going to come for me too.
There's a quote. We were talking on Sunday about this story when I was editing it, or when I was looking at it. And I remember you said a quote, something like, I might not agree with what you say, but I'll fight for your right to say it.
Yeah. 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 I forgot. There's a political theorist. I forgot which one it is, but that's basically what he says. It's like, I may not agree with you, but I'll fight for your right to be able to speak on it. And again, it's that thing where if you can't speak on it, either my rights are limited too, or I just don't have it either.
Okay, if you could drop a dream opinion piece on any take you wanted, what's your take?
So there is one opinion that's been done before, so I can't write it, but I really, really wanted to speak on like the right to communicate, the right of communication. So, you know, different from protest, but it's more like, everybody should be taught ASL or some form of like nonverbal communication that way, because the deaf and mute community has a right to communicate with the rest of the world, right? It shouldn't. Now it's a little bit easier, I assume, because of like texting, you can use those kinds of things. But it seems very, it's just difficult, or it doesn't make sense to me that we don't prioritize that type of communication too, because it can be so useful in different situations. Like if there's moments where you have to be quiet and you can sign it, that would just help. But also just being in service industry or just trying to speak with people, it's they shouldn't, mute and deaf people or people who rely on ASL shouldn't have to hope or rely on, they shouldn't hope that other people would learn it, or even just have the expectation that they don't. Like it should just be a given that people have that knowledge and that ability to communicate with them.
Luis, I noticed a little change in the paper recently.
Really? What'd you notice?
Opinion headlines are in italics now?
Yes.
What's up with that?
I fought for that.
You fought for that? How'd that go? You process it or what?
I did. Actually, it was more of a demonstration.
Okay.
Right.
I didn't break any rules. I was cordial.
Well, did they listen to you?
Yeah, well, there.
Well,
yeah.
Hey.
Shout
out being
Well, how do you feel? Does it bring a new vibe to opinion?
I think the reason why I wanted to make them, why I wanted to italicize them in the first place, is that I think it's a good kind of visual distinction when looking through the paper. Mm-hmm. We use the same font for everything, either bold or thin. We don't really deviate from that too much. So I wanted there to be a better distinction between opinion and the rest of the sections, because our opinions are ours, right? We don't want that to be kind of like, oh, like our opinions are what DT shares as well. Because that's just not what opinion sections are. So I think having, you know, the illustration opinion section at the top, having it italicized is just a very quick marker for people to be able to see and tell that, like, oh, this is different from the rest of the paper. It's not objective, non-biased, right? Because the whole point is that we're trying to make arguments. So that's why I fought for the italics. I just like how it looks too.
Do you have anything else to say?
I don't.
Okay, get out.
Get out.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey guys, your digital managing editor here, Isaiah Malari of the Daily Titan. Make sure to keep up with our stories by picking up the paper, which we publish weekly. And make sure to follow us on all our platforms on Instagram, X, Facebook, YouTube, and our TikTok, which is brand new, by the way, at the Daily Titan. Thank you guys for listening and supporting student journalism.
On the topic of protests, we're going to be covering an article from our news editor, Brian Jimenez, which covered the protest that just occurred on campus on the anniversary of the October 7th attacks. This protest is one of the first of the semester, and it was also one of the largest so far this semester, featuring multiple groups that took place in organizing it. And this also comes as one of the first protests of the semester after the implementation of the CSU Board Trustees' Time, Place, and Manner mandate. ASI signed a resolution to divest in companies that supported the war, and the CSUF claimed that they do not have any money invested in those companies, but they still said that they stand with the CSU Board's statement that they will not be divesting from companies that support that.
Yeah. So, honestly, as a student, it's
disheartening at the very least.
Very disheartening, to say the least. But I think one of the biggest takeaway from the story, I think it was really cool how they had so many impactful speakers at the protest.
Definitely.
Including, and hey, sorry about this pronunciation, but Sabri Alfara, he is a Palestinian student from Gaza who said that 300 of his family members have died in the past year, 50 being like unfortunately just killed just last week. And I think having those people present and like having their voice present in the media and just, you know, on campus, it really makes it real to the people who don't want to listen.
Oh, definitely. And it's one thing to just have someone speak on an issue. It's one thing to have someone live through the issue and then speak on their own experience with it. And to have someone firsthand come and say like what they've dealt with and what they've had to go through.
Absolutely.
Is so much more meaningful than just looking at statistics. Hearing someone's story is way more impactful.
It definitely humanizes the issue to the people who still just want to turn like a blind eye and just act like it's not affecting
definitely
the world.
And it also just localizes it to students as well, because it's not absolutely just a Palestinian person. It's a Palestinian student that goes through. That's your classmate. That's your friend. That's someone that you see on campus. And it's something that you need to understand is going through such a tough time because of the situation.
Absolutely. All right, transitioning on to a lighter subject, we're going to be moving over to Lifestyle Desk for an event that we actually covered this weekend.
What was the event?
Oh, it was actually at Radiant Beer Co. It was Warehouse of Contemporary Arts event.
That is so crazy. I was at this event.
Were you actually?
Yeah, I think I saw you there.
Wait, I think I saw you too.
Were you behind the camera?
Yeah, I think you were in front of the camera.
That sounds about right, yeah.
Wait, Loki, I think we might have gone together to shoot a multimedia package for Daily Titan.
I think that people could find that on YouTube at
Wait,
Daily Titan.
Wait, I think you can. He wrote an article and I shot the media.
Oh my God, that is nice. So crazy.
It's super cool. And like the people there were so cool. Like it was such a welcoming environment. And like, I think it comes from the fact that everyone there is like an artist in some regard. And it's just so cool to be in such a space that is so celebratory of everybody's like, I don't know, like creativity. And like, there's no shame in the game.
The concept behind this event is that it's held quarterly in order to let artists show off and promote what they've been working on over time. And the key concept behind the event, the driving force, is the fact that the artists submit that they want to be a part of the event, but they do not submit their art. So no art is checked prior to the event and prior to people hanging things up at the event. So the first time you enter the event is the first time anyone is seeing any of the art that's going to be there. It's not previewed. It's not checked at all. So it gives artists a chance to feel like they can show off whatever they want. Yeah. They pride themselves on not censoring artists, giving artists the freedom of space to do what they want with the space they have.
Hey, shout out my favorite Stan. He was selling alien statues, and I thought that was so cool.
He was also a really cool interview as well. He was really insightful. Yeah, there were a lot of media. There were just so many cool characters at this event. Like, there was one Fullerton student who was a member of one of the bands that played. And there were also just some longtime like Fullerton alumni that were also there as well, just from the area as well. There was one guy who was selling digital photography. He would photograph things and then he'd edit them in post and make it look more like a painting and more like artwork. And he was there. He said he got into art actually as a way to help him cope through a surgery that he'd been dealing with.
Yeah.
And it was also nice to see how much artists can use this space to like express themselves and deal with what they have going on in life as
Absolutely.
Well. Because art is such a therapeutic medium for everybody involved. And it's nice to see how everyone kind of handles that therapy in their own way. Some people like the photography side. Some people like the painting side. Some people like the pencil sketches and things like that.
Yeah, I think it's cool because, like, if you're into one, you're kind of into all of them.
You know what I'm saying?
Like, the guy that you were talking about, he was there doing digital photography. But I commented on his hat because he was wearing, like, the sickest hat. And he was like, thanks, I made it. And I was like, dude, you're so cool. Like, you made that? Like, and he was just like, oh, yeah, I just work on them in my free time, you know, like, something cool. And I was like, yeah, man.
No, yeah.
That's what it's all about.
When I was speaking to him, he gave me his business card. And when he gave it to me, he was like, oh, yeah, it's printed on banana paper. And I thought that was so cool. So I asked him, like, what does that mean? And he was like, oh, yeah, no. So it's, like, made out of banana, like, leaves and stuff like that. And it, like, no trees get harmed in the process. And it's just so cool to see how creatives extend all their artwork into everything they do, into their way they dress, into the way they promote themselves, and the way they interact with each other and things like that. But, like, what you were saying about the community aspect, one of the, like, quotes that really stood out to me when I was interviewing people, the guy that you said was selling alien statues of ceramics, one of the biggest quotes or one of the biggest takeaways I got from one of the quotes he gave me was that he enjoyed like setting up and taking down. And like the biggest part was that he said he really enjoys saying hello and goodbye to everybody and putting a smile on their face about the art that he shows. And the fact that he takes so much pride in like just getting to know artists and getting to meet them and getting to say, hey, what's up, and rekindle with old friends for the moment is so cool, because like you can always talk about art to anyone. But to talk about art to other artists is such a different level of conversation, because that's such an elevated discourse of like,
Absolutely.
You know exactly what it's like to go through the creative process. You know exactly what it's like to work with this medium and that medium and things like that.
And on the flip side, like everyone is talking about the same thing, but they do completely different things with it, which is just so cool.
Yeah.
Hey, man, I could talk about art forever.
No,
like, genuinely. We could talk about this forever.
This event was genuinely so refreshing to see, because it also just blended visual and performing arts as well. Like, they had live bands, and the live bands will interact with the artists and the vendors and things like that.
Yeah.
And it was cool to see how, like, instead of being separated, like, oh, at concerts, it's just about the music. Or, oh, at, like, an art gallery, it's just about the physical art. To see them blended in the same space, in the same, like, 6-foot vicinity.
Yeah,
it was so
seriously.
Cool.
Yeah, I think it was really cool. And I definitely tried to reflect this in the multimedia piece, that there were so many different art styles there. Like you said, like some guy was doing photography, some people were painting, some were sketching, like some had statues. It was just so cool. Like it was such an amalgamation of so many different avenues of art.
Moving on over to our opinion desk, we're going to be talking about textured hair care.
Right off the bat, I think it was a great lead to like set the tone for the story that 56% of U.S. adults have textured hair and most don't feel comfortable taking care of it.
No, I definitely think that was a great lead into the story, because it also opens it up to the audience of like how many people really do resonate with this topic but might just not know about it yet.
Yeah, for sure. I think the sources for this story were really great, and I know that one of them was a cosmetologist and a textured hair care specialist, and she said something along the lines of, it's a lot of the blind leading the blind, and that really like, hey, me personally, I have very straight hair, so it's very easy for me to do my hair, but like my best friend has textured hair. So I feel like I've heard about this so much. Like it's cool to see it talked about more because I see how it affects her every day. And I see her get so frustrated with her hair. So, hey.
It was also very interesting to see how the story was written and how it came together. It was written by one of our assistant opinion editors, Maddie Livingston, who herself has textured hair. So to see her kind of put her own experience into the story as well and understand what it means to her as someone with textured hair was definitely like, it was eye-opening to see how much they go through and like how many hurdles they have to jump in order to understand their hair and how like the lack of knowledge that's being shared when it comes to that type of hair.
For sure. Especially because it's like, it's hair. Like everyone should
know how
be
to do
comfortable
it.
And like especially just being comfortable going anywhere and trusting that someone knows how to deal with your hair. Like if you're going to like a salon, like everyone should expect that their hair be treated the right way. You know what I'm saying? Definitely. So I think it's cool that I know a lot of cosmetology schools are starting to teach more textured hair care in their curriculum. So I think that's, you know, a step in the right direction. But I have very like pin straight hair. So like, hey, I mean, I take care of my hair, but like all I need is like hairbrush and like hair oil. You know what I'm saying? So like seeing TikToks about like people going through like 13, 15 different products to find one good one. That is so frustrating. Like, genuinely. I can feel that pain as just a woman who like cares about their hair so much. Like, I feel that pain, dude. That has to suck. And it's really cool to get like this perspective and this voice out there more.
Diving on into our sports desk this week, we are going to be talking about men's water polo. This week, they played against UC Santa Barbara and they lost in a home game at Titan Aquatic Center. Final score being 12-6.
So their goals for the season are not like necessarily like domination or like to do like super incredible well. They're just trying to get their footing as a team still. I mean, even though that would be great, but it is their second year, so they're just trying to get their footing.
No,
essentially.
Of course, definitely they want to find their rhythm and find their pace as well. And they're also playing against tough teams last year and this year as well. And while we're talking about water polo, why don't we give a quick shout out to Togan Osbeck, who is now the career leader in goals as a Titan with 98 across last season and this season.
I heard a rumor that they will be traveling to La Jolla to compete against UC San Diego this Friday.
Well, then we'll be looking forward to that. Best of luck to them, and we hope it turns out well.
Tusks up.
Tusks up.
All right, Titans, it's looking like that's it for us today. But hey, while you're out on campus this week, snag a copy of the Daily Titan. We put a lot of work into there. So hey, if you like us, we love you, and we'll see you next Wednesday. Have a good week.
All right, big dogs. Before we head out, you know we got to get thankful for a moment. So first of all, going to give a big thank you to our executive producers, Isaiah Malari and Emily Wilson. Our producer, Luis Vizcaino, who is also our special guest and opinion editor this week. We are also going to give a thank you to our assistant producers, Raniel Santos and Michelle King. And also, thank you to my co-host, Jaden Lovelady, and myself for being here and putting on for DT Pod. Make sure you guys grab a copy of that paper, check out Daily Titan on dailytitan.com, and read what we put out, because we put a lot of effort into it. Thank you all for listening, and we'll catch y'all next week. Peace out.